All right, so I know we kind of jumped with an intro and you went out to different workshops and now we're back, and then I know you're going to turn around and you're going to get a chance to go to another workshop. So just kind of for the good of the order, back to our four levels of stories. What did you, you know, I'd like to hear from people who went to each of the different workshops. What did you, give me some evidence of, you know, how that intersected with what you were learning in the workshops. Did that prompt anything for you? Anybody? Yes, ma'am. Old stories, exactly, that aren't keeping pace with the change of the neighborhood and who we are. Absolutely. And it's so interesting how often old stories that are very anecdotal are just accepted as fact when we go through some visioning or developing a mission statement, and someone will say, well, we are this or we do this, and well, actually, like, we don't anymore. So that's really hard, those stories that have to die. And there's a whole ministry in kind of hospice care for old identities. You know, how do we... Yeah. All right, anybody else have any good examples from any from that workshop or any of the other ones? I know they were good workshops. I know you got good stuff. All right. So here's a challenge for us. When I think stories, I think words. I love words. Like, one of my favorite things, you know, I love learning about words. I love collective words. Here's a fun fact for you if you learn nothing else today. Does anybody know, you get bonus points, what the collective term is for a group of bears? What is it? Anybody? It's a sloth. Isn't that crazy? I love collective, so I love words. I'm a reader. I know. Like I said, you've now learned something today, if nothing else. I love words. I'm a reader. I'm a writer. And boy, we are people of words, right? We are homiletists and writers. We have our Book of Common Prayer, which are beautiful words. In the beginning was the word. So when I think stories, I think words, I think books. However, what we're beginning to realize is that that's not the only way to tell a story, right? So earlier we talked about epic stories, and another use of epic is as an acronym in this book, The Gospel According to Starbucks. Now, whatever you may think about Starbucks, and, you know, I love me some Starbucks, it's a really interesting book in looking at what Starbucks does and how they do it so well and what appeals to people and are there lessons that we can learn as the church. And it's not just about serving better coffee, you know, though that's never a bad thing. So the acronym EPIC talked about the things that people get out of their Starbucks experience. It's experiential, something people engage with in a sensory way. It's immersive. It's participatory. If people aren't participating, the thing doesn't happen. Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's a good thought for church. Imagistic, and that's the one we're going to be coming to. So it's something that forms a sense of identity or image, and there's a strong visual connection to this. And then connective, this is the relational aspect, which certainly we'll talk more about later. So thinking about this word, imagistic, image, imagery, visuals. There's a really interesting quote in the New York Times talking about the growing importance of images rather than just text and how it is altering our culture. This is the sentence that, like, blew me away. It is transforming many people's personal relationships. We talk in pictures. Have you ever thought about that? Huh. I was really, really intrigued by that. And so I thought about my own life. And here's what I can tell you. Oh, you're going to see a lot of my family. Every day, I can tell when my nieces get home from school because I start getting Disney emojis and GIFs, right? What are some of the platforms that our younger generations, our digital natives, utilize? What are they?
Snapchat,
Instagram, right? These are visually based platforms. It's not enough, you know, my daughter and her best friend in the middle, they were in Disney World this past weekend. How, you know, two 20-year-olds like Luce in Orlando. How I knew what was going on was I followed their Instagram stories. And yeah, she's texting me, my plane landed. We're going out into Orlando tonight. But where I really got the sense of what they were doing was, like I said, following their Instagram stories. I'm a little addicted to Instagram stories. Unless you say, okay, you know, that's great, but they're 20 years old. I present to you exhibit whatever on the right, and here we have some of, the pillars of the church. In this picture, we have three people who are deputies to General Convention. One is a member of Executive Council. One is on PB&F, and we have three former present or current board members of FORMA, and then there's me. One of my friends in the picture lives in North Carolina, and we're very close, and you know, it's with the hurricane impending, we have a text group. I mean, every day, we are on this text group constantly, and we're all across, you know, we're across the country. And as the hurricane got closer, and she had a parent that was having a medical issue across the seas, I mean, it was one of those where, like, everything was just exploding. We realized, like, we needed to step up the communication. The text wasn't enough, and so we jumped on the video chat. Like, what do you say? Yeah, your house might be destroyed by a hurricane, your parents' house might get destroyed by a hurricane, you know, and your mother might need to be medically evacuated from Germany. This was, you know, this is what we were dealing with. There was nothing much to say, and somehow we started playing around with the face morphs and the silly stickers. I mean, we are, you know, adult women. And yet, we took to it like 13-year-old girls. And there was something about the energy of that. You know, it was silly. But on the other hand, there was some real pastoral care and connection. And maybe you don't relate to this at all. But I guarantee we're going to find some ways that I think, you know, that you do relate visually. And again, you know, we talk about the different generations, and you could say that I'm an anomaly, and you know, if we're talking about a baby boomer generation or the silent generations, well, they're not interested in visual storytelling, particularly as it happens on social media in the digital space. If you are telling me that they're not interested in your stories being told that way, I would argue with you, your stories aren't compelling enough. Because here's what I'll tell you, if the digital platform is the only way the great-grandma is gonna see her great-grandchild, you better believe she's gonna be on it. I see that all the time. Your older parishioners, I guarantee they are communicating with family members. Maybe they are not super adept. Maybe they are calling their grandkid at school saying, how do you do that again? You know, when I go over, like, we have to reset my mom's Wi-Fi password every time. But, you know, she's FaceTiming with the grandkids every time. And so I think that's something that we need to give people of every generation more credit and more opportunity. And sometimes we need to facilitate it, but let's never assume that they're not interested. Let's say that maybe our stories aren't compelling enough. Now, am I saying that digital relationships take the place of in-person communication? Absolutely not. I can tell you a couple stories, but I'll tell you this. Number one, digital can still be real. It can still be authentic. My you know, goofy group of church ladies that I'm friends with, we formed our relationship doing an intentional residency as part of a leadership cohort. We live all across the country. We sustain that relationship digitally, and we see each other a couple times a year. My sisters, I see them a couple times a year. We sustain that relationship digitally. There's other people that I have met. Wait, where is Beth McGill? Beth, are you in here? Yay! Okay, so we've been working with Beth and her church, and you're going to hear more about that tonight. And she's going to leave before we get to talk about it, but that's okay. I've never met Beth, but, like, I've been on video chats with her. We've been working with them. And so she walks in, and you're like, here you are, and you are you. Those are real relationships. So, again, not take the place. It's and. I would also argue that a shift to visual storytelling isn't really new for us as a church, is it? It's rather a return to a very old practice and the way that we told stories before they were codified with the printing press, right? How did we tell our stories? Okay, we've got, you know, the paintings, the stained glass, weavings, carvings, right? And different pieces of liturgical art, you know, there's different levels of storytelling. One of the things we always want to think about in a story, this is in a quote from a book by Jim Naughton and Rebecca Wilson, Speaking Faithfully, which I think is one of the best books on church communications as a whole that is out there. And they say, and this is one of those things that you're like, well, duh, but it's really profound. In a story, something happens. That's a really key point. So some of our older liturgical art tells a story, something is happening, and maybe some not so much, or maybe some in a different way. I mean, we saw a creation of Adam, so we can connect that to, you know, that story. And it's interesting when we talk about those different levels of storytelling, looking at, for example, the baptism window, or you'll see a lot of medieval paintings in which the patron, so the person who is kind of the contemporary person being transformed by their faith or a reflection of their community, was painted into the biblical scenes. Have you seen those? So again, back to the beginning, we've told these stories at different levels, and we've used visual imagery to tell our stories. So what does that look like today in the visual stories you might tell? So when I want to figure anything out for, like, how do I do something in a church context, I often find that it's helpful for me to step out of a church context and think about it. Sometimes that helps to clarify it for me. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce you to my family. We are those people walking down the boardwalk in matching white outfits. So it's not a bad picture, right? Not bad. I mean, we look like a pretty fun group of people. We enjoy getting together with one another. We look like we might have a sense of humor, or at least a thing for antique sock monkeys. So some personality comes through this picture. But what are some of the issues with this picture? So number one, it's 10 years old. And I know you all are thinking like, wow, Lisa, you look just the same. Thank you for noticing. All the kids in this picture, they're all taller than me now. There's a couple kids that are now part of our family that aren't in the picture yet. Thank God we haven't lost anybody, you know? But so our family dynamics have changed. Also, this picture was taken at the beach, which we love, but that's not really our collective place, so we don't really get a sense of accurately who we are. And then let's talk about those matching outfits. They do photograph well, but it also kind of obscures the fact that, you know, we're not an entirely homogeneous group. We are a collection of unique individuals affiliated by blood, by choice, and usually by affection. So this is a very frozen moment in time. You know, it's like when you get everybody together, like in your church on Easter. I wish your church always looked like it does on Easter, but, you know, that's not necessarily the case. This doesn't really tell me a story. The pictures that I see on social media of six ladies sitting around a table with a cup of coffee doesn't tell me a story about your church. So what are pictures that tell a story? Now let me really introduce you to my family. How many of you share pictures with your family on like an almost daily basis? Like, who's got the family photo share going? Come on, I cannot be the only one. Oh, people, how do you keep up? How do you keep up? So now you begin to see life as we live it, our daily lives. So these pictures are, I have three sisters. You know, I have five nieces, two nephews. I mean, there's pictures going back and forth every day, all day. They show where we're from, what we're doing. They're dynamic stories shared with others as we live them. They convey an underlying message of, I wish you were here. I wish you were here to see Bella in her homecoming dress. I wish you were here to see baby Zozo just rolled over. I wish you were here to see, you know, we're going to the Cubs games, go Cubbies, you know, or whatever. So collectively, they're individual stories but they make up the ongoing narrative of our family, right? So each member is part of this bigger thing. You know, we are family. You remember that Sister Sledge song? We danced to that at everybody's wedding. And that's us. So each member capturing, sharing, and inviting others into their daily experiences. This is how we relate to one another. And you might say, you know, that's just your family. But I think that's everybody. Again, it comes back to that craving to be a part of something. So again, we love and crave stories. We crave epic stories. And now, more than ever, we crave visual stories. So they're transforming our relationships. So what does that mean? How and where do we share these visual stories? What platforms do we use? You know, we're no longer huddled around our campfires. And I love the idea of sitting around a campfire telling stories. I love yesterday, so we sat down at dinner and we got to talking, and one of the ladies at the table started telling me something, probably, I think it was a dog or a cat story. And then she said, oh, I mean, and you're here during a conference on storytelling, I shouldn't be telling you this. I'm like, no, this is what I love. So again, when we have the opportunities to share these stories face to face, fantastic. But oftentimes, we don't have those chances face to face. And where we can really disseminate these stories and have a broader reach for our stories is in the digital space. And like I said, it's not an either or, it's an and. Bishop Curry talks about being the Episcopal branch of the Jesus movement. And that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. But to me, part of that means making sure people know that God is wherever they are. God is already there. We're not bringing God anywhere. God's already there. We're letting people know it. And so what's the old blessing? God go before you, God go behind you, God go beside me. And I would say God go with me into the digital space, because people are there. Not everyone here might be there, but make no mistake, you know, a third of the planet is on Facebook. That's mind-boggling. I mean, think about it. We talk about, oh, we've all got that spark of divine in us, and that connects us to every person, but I could actually friend every person on the planet. And you can say, well, what does that really mean? But still, there's an element of connection. And what drives people onto those platforms? It's the connections. So again, I think our role is to make sure that the kingdom of God is represented in the digital space. Now, I know you've got pushback. And I'm the first to acknowledge this. We are building this plane as we fly it, right? None of us here, really, are digital natives. This is a brave new world. And there's a lot of challenges in the digital space. I mean, we hear all the time about data breaches and, you know, the mess with, you know, Cambridge Analytica and the manipulation of our political information and fake news. And I've talked to a lot of churches who have said, well, we're just going to step back until they figure it out. They're not going to, that's not how it works. Because you know what? This social media in the digital space really just expands, amplifies, and accelerates what is happening in the real world. It's not going away. And I think we need to be present and have an obligation to be present to do it right, or at least try. I think as the church, we need to step into this moment. You know, when you talk about respecting the dignity of every human being, what does that mean in a data context? I'm going to respect not just your data and your information, but I'm going to respect pictures of you and your personal story and who owns it. I'm going to be clear and transparent in how I'm using your data. I'm going to protect your data. So to me, we have an opportunity to do it right. And here's the thing, and this is the scary part. As much as we're building this plane as we fly it, somewhere out there right now is a kid, or maybe, you know, college student, who has an idea that's going to change everything. And we have no idea. We have no idea. But I think all we can do as the church is continue to keep flying this plane and be a part of it. Because as much as there are challenges, and you know, we can say, oh, well, I just prefer to do it in person, the opportunity is so great to transform lives, to reach people with our stories, to hear their stories, to engage with stories. We can't ignore that. And so that's what I really want to invite you into, you know, over the next couple of days. So where are we going? We have our lost tree slide again. And I have no idea what my timing is. We're a little early. You're going to have more workshops next, right, Julie? Okay. So some of them are going to be repeated. And then after lunch, you've got your chance to go do whatever. Whoever's taking the hike, somebody wait for me. I want to do that. And I'll be back by 5. At 5 p.m., we're going to do a going deeper. And at that session, I want to do some kind of hands-on examples of some of my favorite digital platforms and digital practices. And some of them are things that we cast out into the world, but they don't have to be. Some of them really can be for your personal spiritual formation and development. If you have a device, go ahead and bring it. And I realize we don't have a lot of Wi-Fi and whatnot, but that's okay. Tonight at 7 p.m., we're going to continue the conversation about visual storytelling, and I'll be sharing a lot more examples. We're going to see a lot of video, and we're going to have a lot of, like I said, examples, and I'm going to ask you to help me fill in the gaps on some of these stories and see what we see and try to get a sense of, like, what is this picture telling us. I know it's a long day, but I promise it'll be fun. If you have popcorn, there will be videos, so we should bring it. Tomorrow, I want to talk a little bit about how society is changing and how that impacts what the implications are for us as storytellers. We'll talk about some of the practical and tactical challenges we face in trying to get our stories out with the world. What I'm really trying to do here for y'all is move from the big theoretical into giving you some kind of, throwing just lots of practical examples at you that, you know, maybe this one doesn't make sense to you, but maybe that one will. And I am available for anyone throughout the course of these next days to bounce ideas off of, or, you know, tell me what you're doing or questions that you have. I'd be happy to address those. So, yes, ma'am? You're pointing. Sorry. Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm. Ooh. Yeah. 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 Yes. I'm getting a weird feedback. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yeah, and yes, thank you for that. I think authenticity is a huge thing. And I think it comes back to a little bit of what I said earlier. Social media doesn't really make anything different. It just accelerates it, expands it, and makes it bigger. So if you are an insecure 12-year-old girl, it's going to make the insecurity that much worse. You know, I'm not going to deny that. And I think I would say that if you are an authentic person, chances are the way you present in the digital space is going to be fairly authentic, though it may not represent the full range of your life. And that's an unsatisfactory answer, I suppose, because, I mean, we've also known people, I was talking earlier, Webster, who was around here somewhere, I was talking about, you know, I live in an upper middle class community where facade is everything. I mean, and this precedes social media, okay? So facade is everything, and people have the resources that they can create that facade. So, you know, I would argue there is a lack of authenticity in many relationships there. You know, and there's still brokenness behind that facade. Does social media exacerbate this? Yes. It does. I mean, there's no two ways about it. But then on the other hand, I still keep coming back to, okay, we need to be present for our young people that are growing up in this environment, and their whole world has been framed and shaped and contextualized in this environment, and we need to help them navigate this environment, which is hard to do when we're like, I don't know how Snapchat works. So that's a difficult thing. How do we teach our young people to be authentic, period? You know, that's the first question. And I think whatever it is, I think that authenticity will be magnified in the digital space as much as inauthenticity will. I also think, there's a health in removing yourself from certain situations. You know, if you're struggling with that, and if people are struggling with jealousy or feelings of insecurity, I mean, there's a bigger conversation to be had there. I don't know. I don't know if that fully answers it. It's a struggle. Again, this is part of us figuring it out, but I don't think the answer is to step back and say, well, I'm just not going to be a part of it. Because I think we miss out. I think people need us there, whether we like it or whether we don't like it or whether we're frustrated with elements of it. I think people need us there. And maybe I think they need us there trying to be our authentic selves. That's a good question. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Yes. It's tough. Like I said, I'm a writer. I know. But so it's interesting, and okay, I did not go to seminary and I don't know Greek, but is word in that instant, isn't there a definition that it was more of like an embodiment? I don't know. Talk to me.
Logos means word, but it also has some connotation of a sort of essence.
Yeah.
You know, an existence.
Go for it, Julie. Ooh. Ooh. And again, I'm not saying either or. You know, it's just that we have been so skewed towards word that I'm now focusing us very heavy on visual because I think that's a different way of thinking for most people, but not one or the other. Yes, sir. Oh, we could debate this all day. This is fun. Okay. Yes, ma'am. This is true. Thank you. Anybody who wants to talk Instagram stories, we can talk that all day. Yes, sir. So you're advocating video. Absolutely. Now, and somebody had an interesting point last night, and I think this is, in all this, like one of the issues with video is I know a lot, I mean, like where we are right now, I couldn't stream video if my life depended on it. So there are real practical considerations. Videos, there's a neat engagement and experientiality with video that conveys something really, really different. Somebody else had their hand up. Yay, this is a fun conversation. And I think there's just a yes, ma'am. Go ahead. No. Yes. 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 So, you know, it doesn't mean that an Instagram account is on your pictures, Yeah. Well, and a great example of that, and again, we're going to get far more into those details, which I think you'll enjoy. There's a great example of that in Chicago when the Cubs won the World Series. One of the Chicago papers had done away with photojournalists, and I forget what they were using, whether it was, you know, kind of citizen photo takers or, you know, their writers were also taking pictures, and the other paper hadn't. And I remember reading an article that talked about the demise, unfortunately, especially in this very visual age, of the dedicated photojournalist, and they showed the picture taken by someone who, like, quote-unquote, knew what they were doing, and other people were just kind of snapping a shot. And one picture clearly told a better story. Now, I don't want that to deter you and think, like, okay, well, I'm not that good. You can get there. You can get better at taking pictures. And a lot of it is you need to start thinking about what stories you want to tell. And once you start looking for the stories that you want to tell, you're going to have a better idea of what pictures you want to capture. And again, tonight, we're going to go through a ton of different examples that I have, and we're going to talk about what story is this picture telling? What story is this video telling? What are you getting into this? So, any final questions for the good of the order? All right, well, this, okay.
Not a question, but back to the word.
Ooh. I think we need to stage like a word versus image kind of, you know, 10-point debate. It'd be so much fun. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much. Enjoy your next workshops, and I will see you back here at 5.